Welcome, everybody, to the Task Force on Cadmium and Children's Jewelry. We have three presenters today, and we are yet again testing our technology here in the Capitol and actually having Dr. Rosenblum Skype in, which is amazing for us here. I would say that Representative Barham has had a death in the family. He will not be here, but when we are asking questions of Dr. Rosenblum, you can come and sit here, and I think that we discovered last time that that was the best way for you, Dr. Rosenblum, to be able to hear us. We're not entirely technologically sufficient here yet in Hartford. We're still figuring things out. For the record, David Newman, Anthony DeGeorge, and Senator Witkos will not be with us today. And just so that we are up to speed, we will be still meeting next week because we have scheduled speakers, but we're looking to take a break and get a look at the material that has been presented to us and then reconvene at some point after November. I'm not sure why November is a date, but anyway, so far, yes. But as he said, my co-chair is otherwise involved right now. So right now, yes, if that's going to change, we will get to you as soon as we can. With that, I would welcome Dr. Eric Rosenblum. He's a toxicologist, risk assessor at Rosenblum Environmental. And Dr. Rosenblum, if you could introduce yourself a little bit to the committee, what we are anticipating here. Can you hear us? All right, I'll yell. If you can introduce yourself, and what we are anticipating is that you give us a little of the background, and then we would open it up to questions. We're trying to stay within a 45 to 50-minute time frame here with each of our presentations, so the presentation including the questions. And with that, I'm hoping that you actually heard that, and I will turn it over to you. Yes, we can. Thank you for that. And I guess what we're expecting from you, we are wrestling with the issue of cadmium in children's jewelry, realizing that in 2010 we had some testing showing in a significant amount of cadmium in children's jewelry. So this task force is trying to ascertain exactly what level of cadmium is appropriate, if any, and where we go, recognizing that there are no federal regulations on cadmium in children's jewelry. In children's toys, we know that there is. So that is our interest, and I'm assuming from what you have said that you do risk assessment for products that are being put on the market by industry. I'm apparently asking the questions here, so if I have committee members or task force members that want to jump in, go right ahead. Pursuant to what you have just expressed, one of the issues that we've been discussing is that when the jewelry, the child's jewelry, is distressed, children like to chew on jewelry, they like to bang it around. And it's been in the information that we have received is that that makes the cadmium more bioavailable if the child should swallow it. So that's one of our concerns. In addition to that, our other concern is why do we have cadmium in the jewelry at all, recognizing that in the state of Connecticut we banned it from packaging material in landfills in 1992. So we are wrestling with these issues. And we appreciate that. And, of course, you know that initially they found jewelry that was 50% cadmium, 80%, 90% cadmium, and that that raised alarms across the country. However, some of the independent testing that's done now, apparently the first alarm set up a situation where there was a response and the levels of cadmium went down. But there have been some random testing, and the levels are now going up again. But I would open this. You know, I don't want to be the only one here asking questions. Brent.
Good afternoon, Doctor. Good afternoon, Doctor. You can't see me, though. Anyway, you know, there has also been some discussion about regarding the hazard and risk. There we are. How are you? Nice to meet you. About hazard versus risk and total content versus migration testing. And I wonder if you could comment on the relationship between those scenarios. Sure. We're also looking at, regarding the difference between hazard and risk, we're looking at the difference between testing for total content and migration testing for solubility. And I wonder if you could comment on the relationship between those tests. Well, I guess, so what I'm hearing you saying is that measuring for solubility and the migration of the metal in a digestive system would be the way to measure the risk. So I wonder, do you have any handle on what would be a safe level that could exist in a migration setting? Great, thank you for that. Now, this committee has also asked a question over, several sessions ago about the difference between children and adult absorption of cadmium in the digestive tract, and how long would a piece liable to be in the stomach or in the intestine, and I wonder if you could comment on that. Thank you. Are there other questions? Okay.
I believe Dr. Ginsberg, who's with our Department of Public Health, has some questions, and he'll be sitting next to me in just a second.
Hi, Dr. Rosenblum. Can you hear me?
I can hear you pretty well.
Great. Yeah, good. Okay, so regarding lead, you brought up lead. Before we get to lead, are there any art material LAMA metal standards for either content or extractability? Okay, we're working with the LAMA. It sounds from your introduction that you work with the art materials arena in terms of risk assessment and content standards or standards for children and contact, not hearing? Okay, can you hear me better now? Okay, sorry to hog the mic. I'll try not to swallow it. From your introduction, it sounds like you work with LAMA, which is the Children's Art Materials Regulation, and you're doing risk assessments along those lines. Is that right? No, you referred to, I believe it's called the LAMA regulations for art materials in children. Okay. All right, forget about what it's called. Are you working with regulations and risk assessments relative to children's art materials?
Yes.
That's...
Okay.
Boy, this is, should I send smoke signals? And are there any standards within that regulation for metals in children's art materials?
Well, the version of B4236 that I have
Okay, and are there standards there, or are there just methods, or how do you evaluate whether something in a children's art material, which you work in that area, is going to be okay for that child? Is it a content standard? Is it a leech test? What do they do? Okay, and how do you do that if you're not doing an extraction test? Okay, well, let's try to stick with the scenarios that are most relevant to what we're dealing with here, which is ingestion of, if it's titanium dioxide, it might be ingestion of a paint chip that contains titanium dioxide, or something that a child, a marker, or dye, something that's got a dye in it with titanium dioxide. So if we're talking about ingestion, and you are the risk assessor, and the titanium is there, or the lead is there, or the cadmium is there, and you don't have a quantitative analysis of what will come out in the acidic contents of the stomach, you're going to have to make some kind of an assumption about what percentage of the cadmium, of the titanium, or the lead is bioavailable. And I just want to know how you would do that. Or perhaps a paper like Dr. Weidenheimer's paper, where he looked at a number of samples on the market that he bought from a store. And would you look at that as evidence?
Have you looked at the CPSC data on cadmium and lead leaching under the acid extraction test and to see the variability in those results? Okay, so if you are looking for this analysis for LAMA or for a cadmium regulation or for Prop 65, and you needed to come up with an estimate of how much is leaching, could leach from the toy, you see Weidenheimer's paper, and I'll just mention my review of the CPSC studies, which show huge variability from the same sample. You know, ranging from levels of leaching that would not make you think that there's much bioavailability, to levels from the same sample purchased side by side of the same sandal or the same charm, which does lead you to think that, oh my goodness, it could be 100 or 1,000 times more than the previous test. Under the ASTM method, would you find that you would rely upon those results or want to rely upon those results if you're a regulator, or would you rather rely upon a content standard in which, as Canada, have you read the Canada approach to this, where they use a content standard rather than an extraction test in their logic? So I'm just wondering what you would use in the face of all that variability and whether you looked at Canada's approach. I'm just asking whether you've taken a close look at the literature. And, I mean, irregardless of whether or not we're in Canada or the United States, this is a scientific body. You were referring to European bodies a minute ago. Here's a body that's in the same commercial marketplace as the United States. If they had a regulation for cadmium in children's jewelry, that had a content standard rather than an extraction standard, how would you use that? Are you familiar with the phthalate standards in children's plastic bottles, infant formula bottles, or lead standards in children's toys? Are those content standards or are those extraction standards? The ones that I'm familiar with are content standards. Which ones are extraction standards, please? Well, the point is that when various bodies have tried to regulate toxic chemicals in children's materials, they often use a content standard, which is really the heart of, I think, what we're discussing today, is whether this should be a content standard or this should be trusting an extraction test, which has quite a bit of variability to it. And we're not sure, I think, in Connecticut, whether there is a method out there that's going to be reproducible enough to rely on at the marketplace.
Well, my understanding of the ASTM method currently is content.
I believe we have questions. Oh, no, we don't have questions. All right. Is there anybody else on the committee, on the task force that has questions? Well, then, Eric, I think we know you now, so we can say Eric. Thank you very much for your participation. We have a decision to be made ahead of us, and we are very grateful for your participation. If you have any materials that you think would be helpful to the task force, by all means, we'll have our clerk, Angel, get in touch with you to see if there's anything that you'd like to give to us. And with that, I have no idea how to turn this off, so I'm going to turn to my clerk and ask him to say goodbye to you and thank you very much for helping us. All right, with that, we're going to move right along. Maybe we can move the, because I believe our next presenter is here, and I'm not sure she wants to sit, or does she, is it, where is, do you have a presentation? Do you want that machine in front of your face? Okay, that was my question, Judith. Okay, sit wherever you prefer to sit. We can move that in 2 seconds, but if you want to sit at this. Oh. Yeah, yes. Our next presenter is Judith Haber. She's Senior Laboratory Operations Manager, Analytic Chemistry at UL Verification Services, Inc. And I think maybe you got an idea of where it is that we're going and what were the questions that we're going to be asking you. And okay. I would ask you to introduce yourself with, you know, your background and okay. the things you've been involved in. And it appears that it is similar to Dr. Rosenblum that this is risk assessment
yes.
or not.
Well, no.
You go ahead.
I am not a toxicologist. I am a biologist and chemist. I've been with UL for 29 years and in the analytical laboratory for 29 years. And what we are doing at UL is we are testing product, whether it is sent to us by the manufacturer, the vendor, or a retailer, to federal regulation, state regulation, industry regulation. As UL is a global laboratory, we also do global regulations as well. So I am very familiar with testing children's products as well as children's jewelry.
Then would you like us to just open it to questions? Does that
I
work
would
for
love
you?
That.
Okay. I'd start, and this is simply because I'm very interested in academic backgrounds because I'm an economist and
okay.
I'm you know, did you go college locally? Are you a PhD in chemistry?
I'm not a PhD. I am just a Bachelor of Science, and I went to North Adams State College in Massachusetts.
Thanks. Actually, I went to school up in Massachusetts for a while, too. So I would open this to... I was going to talk about teaching in Massachusetts. No, Tim, I'm only kidding. Go ahead. I'm only kidding. Tim has got some questions for you.
Okay.
Hey, hello, Judith. Thank
hello.
You for coming. I mentioned I represent the retailers on this
okay.
panel, and our concern with this issue is probably obvious, but we are
it
direct.
It is obvious.
We're direct consumers when the product mm-hmm. shows up on our shelves. So you had mentioned in your brief intro that you do testing. Could you? Can we kind of walk back a little bit? Mm-hmm. Are you located here in Connecticut, first of all?
We are located in Enfield, Connecticut.
You are, okay. And so the way in which your company works is you'll get a request on part of say, one of my members that has a product that they are going to ready to bring out to market, and they'll send it to you? Or how does that process work?
It could be that scenario. It could be a retailer that is telling us to the Lime Shop and go take something off the shelf at the, one of their stores.
Okay.
It could be a manufacturer that is working with the retailer, and before they can sell it to the retailer, needs to meet these specifications. So there's a lot of different steps in the process. It could even be raw material that we're testing as well.
Okay. Is it at all common for a manufacturer or a retailer to ask you to sort of cross-check the tests that may have already been done? In other words,
absolutely.
can you check somebody else's work for us?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so oftentimes a retailer will say, we're ready to launch this product, or we're ready to put this on our shelves, but before we do, we want you to make sure that the product meets certain standards. And so part of your job at UL is to do that?
To do that. But the retailer or the manufacturer may not know what they need to meet, so they may ask our opinion as what needs to be tested as well.
Okay.
So some of our retailers are very knowledgeable and have a protocol of what needs to be tested. Others don't know, so we help develop that protocol for them.
And in the results of that protocol, do you get back to the respond back to the retailer and say, hey, be careful now, you don't want to put this on your shelf, it doesn't meet the federal standards, doesn't meet the state standards?
We provide a test report that tells them whether things pass or fail. If we are doing a piece of jewelry, depending on where it's going, let's say the U.S., because we're in the U.S., there are specific children's jewelry lead regulations.
They're right.
Not federal regulations for cadmium. We have a group of people that what they do all day long is look at state regulations so that we can write down what different states have what different regulations for what type of products.
Right. One of the issues here that we're the committee and task force is looking at is not necessarily new products. So you test new products.
No.
You don't test
products that have been around for years.
Oh, you do? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So how does that work?
So, again, depending on who the client is, we have clients that test annually. So they send us product annually. They may have a new SKU out. So they're sending a new SKU. They may be looking for a new vendor, and they'll send their vendor to us as well. We have clients that not only test annually, but as I said, do blind testing to make sure that lots haven't changed, that what they sold last year, are they still selling this year? They're still safe this year because it's probably not from the same manufacturing process that they manufactured last year. Or maybe the manufacturer is using something new, coming up with a new product.
Right.
So it's not necessarily a brand new product before it comes to shelf. It can be already on the shelf, and we're just ensuring that it's still safe.
Mm. And just not to get too much into the weeds, but what does the testing look for? Because we talk a lot about the testing of ingestion and, quite frankly, stuff that, you know, I was never a very good science student, it goes over my head. But what is it that you're testing? So this issue of inhalation and solubility, is that part of your testing protocol? Or
yes, it is.
Okay.
So it depends on what criteria we're trying to meet. So if I have a client that is selling in the U.S. and I have states that use a total content, or states that use a migratable content, I have to perform both tests.
Right. Okay.
And as far as the migratable content, there's about three different tests that may be applied because
right.
not everybody is using the same test method.
Right. Right.
What happens is, you're sending me, let's say, a charm bracelet.
Yep.
And you want to meet industry standard. So industry standard right now is the ASTM procedure, and there's a lot of testing in that standard. And it's not just cadmium. There's some physical testing. There's heavy metal content on surface coating, and there's lead content as well. So we would apply that whole standard to your article. That would go into your charm bracelet needs to be broken down to each component.
Okay.
It needs to be on a component level. The clasp, the jump ring or the closure, the links, the solder, any charm that exists, any bead on that charm. It extends to metal, it extends to plastics, it extends to glass, it extends to polymer or plastic.
So you do a comprehensive individual component test of each
of
those.
What is
and then you measure that test against the standard that's already established. So in fairness, you don't establish the standard.
I do not establish the standard.
Standard established someplace else. They just say you got.
We're just providing the test.
It's a comprehensive test. Let me just wrap this up by saying so. You'll do that for a retailer or a manufacturer. That's one thing you'll do. You'll also, sort of as we mentioned earlier, you'll cross-check testing that may be done at another competitor's place.
And as far as metal goes, metal is not greatly homogeneous, so you may get some variations. So especially when we talk about content very close to the limit. So they may say, well, this person tested it and got this result. We want you to test it and see what you get for that result.
Okay. Thank you.
Have you been involved in any testing of cadmium?
Yes. Every day.
And in what? In children's jewelry?
In children's jewelry, yes. As well as others, yes.
And what standard are you using?
We are not, as I said, not using one just standard. We are using a total content because some states require total.
Oh, I'm sorry, because you're looking at states like we have states that have 40 parts per million. Maryland's got 75 parts per million.
Yes,
California has
300
parts
per
million. I got you. Okay.
And then we have some states that have soluble.
Right.
Or leachable.
So you're doing it. I'm sorry. I missed that. And
yes.
You're doing it. You're not just doing Connecticut. My bad. Okay. So you've answered my question. Are there any other Brent.
In continuing on with that, maybe you could address the cost of doing all that testing?
It's quite costly. So every test that we do, depending how it's performed. So when we do a content, it can be performed one of two ways. It can be performed using XRF, which most states don't allow, which is a much cheaper price. So just that one test for lead or cadmium total content runs $45 per component.
Is that the...
That's one test per component. Most jewelry has a minimum of five components. One lead and cadmium test that way. If we're doing wet chemistry, that cost then goes up to, I believe, about $100 per component. On top of those costs, you need to have your leachable costs if you have a surface coating or a paint-like surface coating on this. That cost is $258 per surface coating. Then the standard, if we're doing the industry standard, the ASTM standard, also calls for leachable nickel content on metal only per component. That leachable nickel content is $270 per component. This becomes quite costly for one charm bracelet. Most of our clients have more than one charm bracelet that they're selling, different SKUs. So what they'll do is they'll say, can I apply this one total test to more than one state? And for me, I say yes, but not all laboratories say that. So some laboratories will tell you, well, you have to do a Connecticut test, you have to do a California test, you have to do a Washington test, because they have all different criteria. That could become very costly.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your laboratory, you guys are certified by the Consumer Protection?
Yes, we are.
Okay. And the way I understand it, retailers or manufacturers can go out and choose whatever laboratory they do as long as it's certified by them. So if I was a manufacturer, I could choose your laboratory or could choose somebody else. So there's many available. Now, with children's jewelry or children's products, that has to be done every year for each product. Is that true?
That is true.
So basically, if I'm selling a line of bracelets in Claire's in Connecticut, the manufacturer is going to have that tested every single year.
It's a testing burden, yes.
For every state.
Well, again, federally mandated children's product under U.S. regulation is only for lead content. It's not for cadmium. Cadmium is state regulated, so it depends on what the states say.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any other? Yes, Anne.
Hi. Thank you so much. Nice to meet you. I had two quick questions.
Sure.
So does your lab provide recommendations on, other than complying with that, whatever that state or federal standard is, do you also do recommendations of like what might be a better way to test or a better standard or offer that analysis, or is it more just...
So, yes, I have sat on task force work groups with ASTM, CPSC, so we do get involved with that. Not specifically with a client, because we do want to do known testing. I don't want to come up with, this is Judy Haber's test, because that's not going to go anywhere, but an ASTM will.
Okay, thank you. Do you know what the standard is in the European Union for cadmium?
So the standard for European Union cadmium is falls under REACH, and it is a total content requirement 100 ppm or less, and it is very specific to surface coatings and plastics.
So surface coatings and plastic in children's jewelry or any product?
Any
that
product.
Has, okay.
There is not a specific jewelry test today for cadmium in jewelry. The only today specific test is the nickel release test.
Okay. So just so I'm understanding it, so that total content standard of 100 parts per million for cadmium applies to any product that has
any
cadmium
product.
In it. Okay. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Gary.
So are you then doing the cadmium ASTM extraction test on a regular basis?
Yes, we are.
Okay, and when you do that on a component of a sample from the store, are you doing that in duplicate, triplicate, single kit? I mean, how does that work?
We do it in duplicate.
Okay, and are those results historically, you know, are they, I mean, how do they turn out? Do you have any records that would be available for a committee such as this to see how the duplication goes?
I do. However, I want to put a caveat onto that. So we start with the total. If the total does not exceed the 300 ppm, then we don't go on to the leachable. So it's only when it goes below that 300, which is a rare case. So not as often as we do the total content. And I'm going to agree with you. You've said it before. There is variability in leachable testing. So there is some variability.
Have you ever done the test in different ways to look beyond 24 hours to see if things change much with different time points?
Not in the case of cadmium.
How about in the case of lead?
In the case of lead, at one time it was a three-day test, yes. So at one time, CPSC had a test that said you had to look at it after 24, 48, and 72 hours.
And would your determination about pass or fail change if you did the test longer than shorter?
Yes, because there was criteria after each time. Yes.
And getting to my question about what is publicly available, I imagine most of what you do is for a customer.
It is proprietary.
It's proprietary,
yeah.
So let me ask a different way. So are you familiar with Dr. Weidenheimer's work in this area?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and I think then you'd appreciate how a marring or changing of the surface could give you a much different result, and even without that, you still get a lot of, from my read of his paper, there's a lot of variability. Are you seeing a similar amount of variability as he showed in his figure one? You may not recall it, but he's got orders of magnitude of variability for the same sample without even scarring it.
I didn't see that magnitude. I'm going to say there's difference, but not that huge magnitude. What I will further say is, in Europe, they have a wearability test that they do before they do the leaching of the nickel release. And that wearability is to put scratching and abrasion into jewelry. Specifically coated jewelry, so that you can see what you can extract down to what's underneath.
And do you feel like that would be something that ASTM should have considered when they were thinking about the cadmium method that they came up with?
It would, for coating, yes. Yeah. So if an item isn't coated, what's on the outside is going to be on the inside. In my opinion. If it's coated, something different can be on the inside.
I was just going to ask Tim if he had another question.
I just wanted to go back and try to clarify something in my own mind about testing standards.
Mm-hmm.
You test a variety of different states, as you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so... where is Connecticut in the range of standards? Are we the most stringent, the least stringent?
You're in the middle. We're in the middle.
Okay, and so the we're in the middle. In other words,
we're in the middle. So I'm going to say that there is a state that goes down to a total of 40 parts per million, and there is a state that is as high as 300 parts per million.
Okay.
We're at 75.
Okay, and so the standard that what is the federal standard that we're
there is no federal standard.
There is no federal standard. So there was a set of recommendations made by the ASTM for standards. Weren't there?
There is an ASTM procedure in children's jewelry for cadmium.
Okay.
It starts off at 300 parts per million total.
Yep.
And then there's two migratable tests in there. One is to simulate stomach acid, and the other one is to simulate mouthability, so
okay.
Kind of saliva.
Okay. And so...
Criteria for those are also different. So the criteria for saliva is 18 micrograms per day, and the criteria... for the stomach acid is 200 micrograms per day.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd just like to reiterate what you had said before. When asked by Dr. Ginsberg, the ASTM standard, though, does not take into consideration cadmium that has been distressed.
No,
and you differentiated that between surface and
the
metal.
They have not... put that in. I guess it would be all on how you read it. If you read for the cadmium, it's all on how you read it. But for the nickel, if you go to the nickel part, if you read where it says to follow the European standard, then
right.
For the nickel release, it would be in there.
Got it. Are there any other questions? Represented. Representative Carter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you were talking about the
So if somebody comes in, a piece of jewelry comes in, and it is over the 300 parts per million, then you're going to go do the other tests, leachability tests. Mm-hmm. In those tests, when, you know, it's put in the stomach acid, for instance, mm-hmm. Is there any, I mean, the way I understand it, that coating is removed by the stomach acid.
I cannot speak on that.
Okay.
I don't know if all coating is removed with that stomach acid. I don't know that for sure. It could be. It could not be. I don't know that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, Representative Carter. Dr. Githa, Representative Esposito.
That's kind of a follow-up to what Representative Carter asked. Do you remove the surface coating before you test at all?
No, we do not.
All right, so you're just doing a test of the total piece.
Well, each component.
And there was one other question earlier. You mentioned that there is no extended testing done on most products. At one time, lead was tested for 3 days. Why was that abandoned? I mean, was there a great difference between the first day and the third day, and they felt that
in
it wasn't
some cases, work? Yes. In some cases, all your extractability was done in the first day. In some cases, no. Depends on the piece. Depends on what the material was made out of. I'm not sure why that went away. That was a CPSC test. I believe it was probably superseded by the total lead content.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and if we can move it along, because we have one more presentation.
Right,
I know Dr. Ginsburg has a question.
A quick process question. What happens if somebody fails the test, or do they not fail? Do you just send back recommendations saying your product has... Okay, so what happens then? What do you do? You just tell them that you failed, don't put this on the market?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Or if it's already on the market... We fail it, and we ask them if they need help taking it off the market.
And do you notify, you know, federal agencies or RICS agency and say this product is failed the test and should be part of a recall?
I do not do that. That's up to my customer to do that.
Okay.
A point of clarification, if I may.
If it's very quick, Brent, we have one more presentation, and I know Dr. Ginsburg has the question.
Yes, but as part of the standard, there's the paint and surface coating stipulation that is different from the substrate. So, of course, paint and surface coating would get removed from the piece before when it's tested.
Yes.
And the other point of clarification is that, of course, CPSC has determined that the 24-hour test does abrade sufficiently the balance of that surface coating, being specifically the plating, to reveal the substrate. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding,
yes.
But
you.
I personally don't know that.
Yes. Thank you.
Gary.
You said you also will do the XRF, and do you also do then the wet chemistry content? And I was wondering, how do those marry up?
So XRF content and wet chemistry?
For total,
in most cases, are very close. In some cases, not so much, and it's all dependent on the results you might get from your XRF. And if we are instating that, if I get a hit that I actually see a number by the XRF, we'll go on to the wet chemistry. So if the XRF comes up as non-detected and gives me a detection limit, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
If it comes up inconclusive or I see a hit, I would go back to my client and say, we really should do wet chemistry on it.
Okay, and you were giving us costs before. Did you give us a cost for the 24-hour acid extraction test?
Okay, this is going to be ballpark. So I believe that test is about $150.
Thank you.
Gary, could you explain the difference between wet chemistry and the XRF?
The wet chemistry I was asking about before refers to total content. So where they would just completely digest under a stronger acid bath and get all the cadmium out of it to see per weight, unit weight of the toy, you know, how much total cadmium is there. The acid extraction, it sounds like the same thing, but the acid digestion is to mimic the stomach's contents, much more dilute acid, and you leave it there for 24 hours to see what may come off the toy in the gut.
Often that liquefaction involves grinding that piece into a powder. You know, so the component part is a powder, and then it's dissolved in acid and then tested for total content.
With that, we thank you for your presentation. I think we're just about on time here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll be moving on to Dr. Bruckner. And Angel, if you can see whether everything's working, that would be great. We have with us today Dr. Christian Bruckner, and he is from the University of Connecticut, the Department of Chemistry. He's a professor. And we're going to see whether this whole thing is going to work. Oh, wait, you're doing it here. Okay, I got it. Nope. I'm not even going to get near this. Yes, go ahead. And you need to, Dr. Bruckner, you need to press a little button there, and then that will see that your mic is on. And go ahead and introduce yourself while Angel gets this set up.
All right. Good afternoon. I'm Christian Bruckner. I'm a professor at the Department of Chemistry at the University of Connecticut on the Storrs campus, and I'm the Associate Department Head for Academic Affairs. My background, I studied chemistry and biology in Germany. Left Germany with an equivalent of a master's degree, went to Canada to the University of British Columbia, where I got my PhD, moved on to UC Berkeley, worked there 2 years as a teacher and researcher before I assumed my position at UConn in 1998, rose through the ranks to be in the position I'm now.
And I would let the task force know that we asked the University of Connecticut if there was anyone that would volunteer to come and talk to us. And thank you, Dr. Bruckner, for being the volunteer, because we were interested in, and we had questions about cadmium itself. What is it? Is it on the periodic table chart?
And the reason why I volunteered is I teach descriptive inorganic chemistry at the graduate and undergraduate level. And what descriptive inorganic chemistry does is it looks at all the elements in the entire periodic table and describes their reactivity and how they interact with each other. And you know, if elements were birds, then the Audubon Field Guide would be my textbook. So I describe every element within a class. And so then describing cadmium in the context of anything is then just nature to me. I like all the elements. That said, I'm not a toxicologist. I am not talking about test standards, industry standards. I'm not talking about whether Connecticut law is better than California law or European Union law. I'm not going to address any hazard exposure assessment things, migration, total contents, all of these things I leave out. I will talk about cadmium as cadmium and what do we need to know in order to understand the issue at hand.
Which will be very useful.
And so, this said. So, but when... In many respects, I don't address in detail any, say, test standards, as we just heard, you know, what's being done. Not at all. What I'm going to address a little bit is what my key message perhaps is if you have hazard and exposure, or the combination of a hazard and an exposure, makes the certain risk, and we are here to assess the risk. But if you remove the hazard altogether, there is no risk. And so, and this is also one of those things that, that I like to show and see. Let's see. We can do this. All right. May I pace around?
As long as everybody can hear you, by all means, pace around.
Can you hear me if I pace around? It's so weird. Oh, I can't see. Or is it, do you hear me? Okay, good. Cadmium. You know, what is cadmium? I mean, cadmium is this shiny, soft, malleable metal.
Hold on 1 second, Liz. We won't get you on tape, Dr. Prugner, so we need you. Can you pace up and down right there?
I'll pace in that chair here. All right. So what is cadmium? Cadmium is this shiny metal, resistant to corrosion. It's very malleable, and it has a high density and a low melting point. And why that is important is you can work with it very readily. You need very low temperatures to cast the jewelry from it, and you can make very details into the jewelry with little force because it is so malleable. And it stays reasonably shiny, and that's why you want to use it. And the density is, it feels heavy. Heavy jewelry feels valuable. Light jewelry, for example, aluminum, is less than half the weight, feels cheap. So if you put in more cadmium, it feels more valuable. If you look at the cadmium world production, you notice that in the last 50 years, the world production has increased maybe 10, 20, 30%. But the economy has increased in the last 50 years a multiple of that. And the reason is, well, cadmium is not a particularly desirable thing to work with. It is toxic. And so whenever there are technological applications that used to use cadmium, they're being tried to phase out, and you use them only when absolutely necessary. And therefore, you have this really flat line over the last 30 years. Cadmium is dirt cheap, and I'm using the word dirt cheap to make a point. It's really less, a few, maybe it's 25, maybe it's 50 cents a pound. Compare this with tin. That you could also use in jewelry with less effect on the health risks. It's $9 a pound. So it's a significant difference. So cadmium occurs naturally. It's around 0.1 ppm of the Earth's crust. Compare this to zinc, copper. It's relatively rare. Compare this to iron that we see everywhere. I mean, these are the numbers that we are comparing here. So it's a relatively rare metal, but it is finely distributed all over the place. There are no significant huge deposits of cadmium like we would find silver ores or gold ores or iron ores. And it's produced as a byproduct from the processing of zinc, lead, and copper. And that is also important because it is a byproduct. That's also why it's cheap. And as long as we produce zinc, lead, and copper, and we need a lot of these three, we as the industry, as the world, produces cadmium. And, well, industry tries to find a use for that cadmium that they're going to produce. Another very important thing is elements never disappear. They only get redistributed. So if you introduce an element to somewhere, it never disappears, right? If you compare this to organic compounds, say aspirin, aspirin at some point breaks down. So even if aspirin were to be very toxic, you wait a while or on the landfill, it gets degraded and it falls apart. And at some point, it's really gone. An element never is gone. An element doesn't disappear. The elements that we have on Earth, they were here for as long as the Earth existed. Okay? Where do we see cadmium these days? Well, there's plenty of cadmium. Nickel cadmium batteries, 75% of all the use of the cadmium today, rust-proofing the coating in some of these golden-looking screws. Semiconductors, here are these light sensors that we have, in the automatic light sensors for solar lamps or so, and some pigments. But there is a statement in one of my textbooks that says, since the 1960s, when alarms were first sounded about cadmium, industry found alternatives for most products that reach the consumer. Yes, please. Oh, that's kind of, thank you. So here's the periodic table, and I'll take you back here to your most favorable moments in chemistry classes. And I have used some colors here. In purple are the so-called macronutrients. So we have a lot of us in our body, and they are used a lot in biology. And in green, they're only the micronutrients. They are the trace elements that we have, only a few grams or milligrams or micrograms in us. And as you can see, cadmium is down here. Cadmium plays no role in higher organisms, or no useful role in higher organisms. And then if I open up my favorite textbook, then I read about the toxicity, and I read, in contrast to zinc, cadmium is not only not essential, it is decidedly toxic for organisms. Maximal allowance, concentration, and so on and so on and so forth. Cadmium is toxic, and I think this is not being disputed at all. Cadmium is toxic in all its various forms. It's actually, the UN has also recognized it as one of the top 10 hazardous pollutants. It is a true problem. Thank you. Next. We do get exposed to small amounts of cadmium, whether we want it or not. Some we can actually control. Cigarette smoke, it's the most important source for cadmium intake for heavy smokers. We get phosphate fertilizers, contain some small amounts of cadmium. They're being taken up by the plants. We fertilize with this fertilizer, and so grains, vegetables, starchy roots, and so contain small amounts of cadmium. Higher concentrations are in crustaceans, mollusks, all these filter feeders, kidneys, mushrooms. And so whether we want or not, we will ingest some cadmium. It's being released into the environment in the production of lead, copper, zinc, of steel, iron, cement burning, municipal solid waste incineration. So the batteries that end up in the incinerator, they release cadmium. The jewelry would release cadmium eventually when it ends up on the landfill or when it ends up in the incinerator. This is why cadmium was banned from packaging materials, because it ends up in the incinerator or in the landfill somewhere. Fossil fuel combustion. So we do get some exposure. And the next slide, please. And in order to understand a little bit more about why cadmium is toxic and where the toxicity comes from, it's worth, again, to look at the section of the periodic table where cadmium is located. Cadmium is sitting right underneath zinc and right above mercury here in this group. It's diagonally across copper. And so in the periodic table, those elements that are close together are related to each other, have similar reactivities. And so there's no... It's not coincidence that cadmium interferes with zinc and copper and its metabolism in the body, and that it's found together with the zinc and copper. Can I have the next slide, please? So there is the cause, and then there is the effect. The cause of the toxicity of cadmium is that it displaces zinc in various enzymes, and we have 200-some enzymes that utilize zinc, need zinc, and we need the zinc to be there for a healthy metabolism. If cadmium is in there, it renders most enzymes totally inactive, and then you have an effect, a physiological effect. It can displace calcium in bones and in enzymes, and particularly when it's in bones, and of course now the battery is failing here, if it's in bones, its half-life is estimated to be about 30 years. So in a growing child, if you get cadmium into the bones, it takes about 30 years for half of it to have left the body again. It can interfere with the uptake of copper and zinc. Both are essential elements we need for our well-being. And so the effects are multifold: kidney failure, cardiovascular diseases, at least it's a risk factor, endocrine disruptor, so it messes with our hormones, carcinogenic, that's a disputed claim, at higher concentrations, bone embrittlement, painful skeleton deformations. So there have been infamous large-scale poison cases in Japan where whole little villages were really heavily poisoned with cadmium. We are not really talking about these concentrations here, but the toxicity of cadmium and the cause for it is what's well known. Because we grew up with cadmium, we as in life evolved next to the presence of cadmium, our bodies contain proteins that are designed to detoxify our bodies of cadmium and mercury and lead and other heavy metals that we ingest regularly just through the environment. And here in the background is one of those proteins, and the green spheres are now the metals they capture. They then get funneled through into the kidneys, and we lose then the metals through the renal pathway. And so they are out of our body. But that ability is very, very limited because nature has been able or has been had the task to cope only with very small amounts of cadmium that are in the ambient environment, not with real solid pieces of cadmium. And so very low tolerable weekly intakes have been set by a number of agencies. And again, all these limits, all of these things are just somebody picks a number that seems reasonable and achievable, and you couldn't pick a number that is well below what you would get through normal environmental exposure, for example. Acute cadmium poison is very hard to treat. So if somebody gets swallows a piece and ingests a lot of cadmium, it's very hard to treat. Because whatever grabs the cadmium also grabs the zinc in your body, and you really need the zinc to survive, and you can't grab the cadmium without also grabbing the zinc. So that makes it also a little hard to treat. Last slide. Cadmium is toxic, that's known. We are already exposed to multiple sources of cadmium. Cadmium stays in the body for a long time, so it's best to prevent the exposure of young children to cadmium in jewelry. This is from New York State health authorities. Replacing lead with the arguably more toxic cadmium makes no sense to me. This is my... So we have banned lead that was in the jewelry for the same reason. Makes it easy to melt, easy to work with. Makes it nice, feel heavy. Well, if I ban lead, I don't want to introduce something even more toxic, arguably, jumping from the pan into the fire. The use of cadmium in children's jewelry is solely to reduce costs. So this is now, whenever I do a risk assessment, then I would also have to look at the benefit. What benefit do I get from using that particular element or that exposing myself to that risk? Well, I get rechargeable batteries that are affordable, and maybe I can balance benefit and risk and say, yes, okay, I can collect them. I have stores take the batteries back, and I really would like to have the rechargeable batteries. And they're being slowly phased out for better battery technologies as well. So here, but is it really necessary to put them into children's jewelry for the benefit of lower costs? Alternatives are available. I mean, there are countries, Europe, and where there are much lower total cadmium content pieces available. Is it possible to get zero cadmium? No, every zinc contains a little, but we can reduce it. Potential harm of children's jewelry does not outweigh its benefits. That's my assessment.
and precautionary principle dictates aim at lowest possible cadmium exposure altogether. So there's one exposure I can legislate or I can limit. I should do it. Anyways, this is my chemistry point of view on the whole issue without going into testing standards or limits set or toxicological details.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bruckner. I have a quick question for you. When you said the alternatives are available and then you cited like the European standard would be 100 parts per million, we have Washington State at 40 parts per million, so presumably they are using some other substitute in their jewelry. What are some of the substitutes and what do they cost?
I would assume tin, copper,
which is what you $9
that I listed earlier. I mean, yeah. $9 worth is 30 cents. Now, the costs of children's jewelry is presumably mostly determined by manufacturing costs, not by raw material costs. That's my guess. When it comes to these cheap materials, it changes a little when you talk about platinum and gold jewelry, where then the raw material really is a lot. But if you look at the price of platinum jewelry and you compare it to the per pound price of platinum, then you still pay a lot for the manufacturing.
And I think it's our understanding pretty much that most of this manufacturing is taking place in China and not in the United States. And you probably don't know that.
I don't know.
I think that has been reported.
Talk to.
I think this was an incredibly interesting presentation, and I so appreciate your volunteering when we called UConn looking for somebody in the chemistry department. And I wonder if there are any questions. What's your name again, Representative Carter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you. Thank you for coming out here. I know that you probably had a lot of things to do today. I wish I had you as a chemistry teacher. Unfortunately, I was a chemistry major for a while in college, and it didn't take.
Right.
Anyway, I noticed on some of your bio here, you talk about being a synthetic chemist, and that you have something to do with metal coordination.
Correct.
What is metal coordination? That's my first question.
It's the interaction of metal with organic materials. So
okay.
I work with the pigments of life, say the materials that make blood red or leaves green, and in the center of chlorophyll is a magnesium. At the center of our blood is iron. And so I look at the interaction of these metals with their organic environments. And
okay. Would you be able maybe to explain then when cadmium has, you say it's high density, very low melting point, when cadmium is put with other metals and they melt them together,
yeah,
would you be able to comment on how like cadmium molecules would react? Would they evenly disperse in the metal, or is that whatever it's melted with, does it become homogeneous, or is it?
You aim at the formation of a homogeneous alloy. So the
right.
alloy is a solution of one metal in another. And in order to work well with it, you want to have a homogeneous mixture. You don't want to have something that separates in two phases, and whatever you pour earlier has one phase, and what you pour later has another phase. And so you alloy it with all different kinds of elements so that you get a nice, low-melting, homogeneous solution that you can work well with.
Okay. And that kind of was what I was wondering, because I know you don't talk about testing standards, but one of the things that we've been talking a lot about is when you have a piece of jewelry, you have a piece of metal or an alloy, whether or not we're going to test the total content or whether or not we're going to find a leaching study. I guess the question to me is, or the question I would have of you, if I go buy a piece of jewelry off the shelf and I want to test it, is it pretty likely that it's going to be, is it homogeneous or homogeneous?
I think it's European versus American.
Okay.
Or maybe just
it's
my
tomato.
Spin on it.
So in this case, if I buy a piece of jewelry, it's likely that the cadmium is going to be evenly dispersed in that metal, I would imagine. And that's the way I'm understanding. Am I off on that?
I would imagine it that it's true for the bulk material, but then there's always a surface treatment, or very often a surface treatment, so that things look shinier or golden or bluish or blackish or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so the surface treatment, then in the surface, you have a different composition. And then as you transition into the bulk material, it would expect it to be more homogeneous.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Tim.
chemistry teacher. It would make it a lot more fun. And Representative Carter did ask a good question I was going to ask in terms of we know you're not necessarily concentrating on testing standards, but my question to you is related to that in one regard. You have on one of your slides, you have acute cadmium poisoning is hard to treat.
Yes.
So how would this happen in children's jewelry, and how often does it happen? I mean, in other words, children's jewelry, as you just mentioned to Representative Carter, is, you know, the cadmium is, for lack of a better phrase, mixed in with other chemicals to make this product. So the standards, which I know you're not necessarily as concerned about, that is not fine cadmium. It's now somewhat diluted with other
Correct.
Things. So it's not necessarily acute.
Yeah.
It's not just that. So
well, I can't speak for how often it happens. And I certainly, you know, the standards, they test for what might happen under a given scenario, right? A kid taking a piece of jewelry in its mouth and leaving it there for 12 hours.
Yeah.
So this is what it tests. But it doesn't test what happens if the kid throws the jewelry first into the dishwasher and then in a can of Coca-Cola. It doesn't check, well, it may dissolve, it may not dissolve. It doesn't check whether what happens if the kid decides to melt it on the stove because it's so low melting. And will now the cadmium fumigate out? And then I get really a high level of pure cadmium that I inhale. Welders have been poisoned by welding through bolts that were cadmium surface treated.
Right.
Cadmium is a major exposure for welders.
Right.
Occupational hazards. It's a different story. Mm. Occupational. So if everything goes as intended, maybe things are safe. But if you cannot check for every unintended use. But if it's not there, is my argument, we don't need to worry about it.
Well, that's true. But that's true with a lot of things. If it's,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Ginsburg, Gary.
Yeah, I was wondering if you knew much about the source of the cadmium that might make it into the U.S. and be put in. I'm sorry, the source of the cadmium that would be used in China to make a toy, is this a waste material? Is it specifically being mined or reclaimed and purified to be put into a toy? What kind of cadmium are we talking about here as a source?
Well, cadmium, China is a major producer of a lot of metals, and I would assume that most of the metal produced, being used in China, is also being produced in China. And it's usually being produced as a side product of the production of zinc and copper. And so it occurs in the flue gases and a lot of the smelting operations. And you can recover it from there actually as relatively pure cadmium. The major manufacturer of cadmium, I think, the world is Canada. But I don't know how much of the Canadian cadmium makes it to China. No idea.
Representative Vargas, did you have a question?
Reading the document and listening to your presentation, it seems to me that if we're going to err as a state of Connecticut, in protecting children, I'd rather err on the side of caution when it comes to kids' health. And maybe this is a little bit of a personal question, but if you had the choice of your children having jewelry with or without cadmium, how would you feel about that?
Clearly without.
That was fairly direct. Brent.
Well, of course, it's all in the definition of without. You know, what is absolute zero? I mean, of course, cadmium exists naturally, and we just can't eliminate all of it. Now, you mentioned, too, that there was a ban on children's products for lead.
From what I read in the material
And a point of clarification is that relating to the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act of 2006, lead is limited to 100 parts per million. But also the reason there was a step down, which was why they went through the different tests. It started at 600, went to 300, and settled at 200 at two-year intervals. So that's how that happened. And regarding the replacement for cadmium in jewelry, cadmium was replaced by tin, but also with zinc. And the important thing about zinc is that they found that whatever trace amount of cadmium might be present in that zinc, it didn't migrate well. It was really inhibited because the molecules joined and bonded very tightly together. So that was a good thing. But regarding to the earlier question, you were talking about the acute cadmium poisoning. Of course, those are really strong words. I was wondering, what kind of quantity or percentage of cadmium are you professing there?
I don't know.
Could you see that 300 ppm would generate a dangerous amount of cadmium in those scenarios?
One would have to do the math. I mean, what's the mass of the piece of jewelry? Do you dissolve it all together? Do you then ingest everything and then migrate everything of that cadmium from the gut into the body? That's the question. You know, how much do you need? And I cannot answer this question. But this was also the question that is very difficult to answer for the toxicologists that then don't know, you know, how long does it reside in the gut? What is the percent of uptake? What is the route of uptake? Inhaling it while heating a piece of cadmium jewelry over a little bonfire or stove is a different story than swallowing it, then is a different story than dissolving into Coca-Cola.
Well, of course, if your seven-year-old is playing with the stove, lighting fires, there's a different problem.
There is a different problem. But my point is I do not know what limit is a good limit. My point is the lower, the better. But I also know zero is not an option.
Yes.
There is no zero. You just have to look a little harder and then you find it. My point is, if it is possible to reduce cadmium content, it ought to be attempted.
And I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, I believe that that's what's been done. But one other question. Does hydrochloric acid, will that dissolve glass?
No.
So there's a term that's called lead-filled crystal. Are you
correct.
Familiar with that? And what percent lead would that be?
Oh, it's a very high percentage of lead. It's maybe 30% lead.
Yes. Now, if that were to be ingested, and somebody gave you a phone call and said, my goodness, my child just swallowed a marble, what would your assessment of their risk be?
Just relax. It comes back in a day.
And I think that's a very key element here because, of course, what's bioavailable is way more important than what is present.
Correct.
Thank you very much.
I would refer people to the floor debate on this particular bill where Representative Adnafi, who had been in the Navy, said that he was aghast that I was promoting a task force, that we should have stayed with the 75 parts per million, because when he was in the Navy, they had to have all kinds of respirator equipment on when they were working on boats that would have anything to do with cadmium. And that is on the record. So that's in reference, Dr. Bruckner, to your saying the acute toxicity.
Yeah, it's also, there is a term, speciation. Speciation matters. So in which form do I have this particular matter? So, yes, if I have it in a vitrified form, in a glass form, leaching is very slow, and you can vitrify nuclear waste so to make it non-bioavailable. Mm-hmm. Yes, and so glass is a different story.
Yeah.
Metals is a different form of speciation, and metals are much more susceptible to being dissolved under various circumstances or melted or evaporated. Mm-hmm. And so speciation matters.
Therefore, don't standards matter then? I mean, just taking what you did, cadmium alone, is harmful. But when it's mixed and together with other products, doesn't the next logical question say, well, when it's mixed, what's the standard? What is it? So those standards matter.
Correct.
And so the study to find out what is an acceptable standard, what's a standard that's least harmful,
that matters. That's the goal, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And I would think the least harmful, in my assessment,
right,
is
the lower,
the better,
right?
The lesser,
right,
potential harm.
Right. But there's a lot of factors involved in studying what the right standards
correct
are. And we've gone through some of those, including testing standards and things like that, and the solubility and all that.
Oh, in many respects, I think it is an epic undertaking to come up with a number
right
that everybody can agree on.
Right, but I mean
my point is no number. I don't advocate a single number.
Yeah,
I advocate at the lower the better.
I mean, in some ways, with all due respect, it is easy to say, well, just take it all out, you know, because that's
oh,
an easy.
Oh, but I'm realistic enough to
yeah
say all is not an issue because if you use zinc, there's always a little bit of cadmium in zinc.
Yeah,
but if there are 10 ppm in a product.
Yeah.
Total zinc or
right
50 cadmium or 50 or 100, that is certainly less than 75 leachable or, you know. So I'm just saying, aim at the lowest possible, err on the side of caution,
right,
and what is the benefit I get from a larger amount, and what is the risk?
And to your that's point, the addition of cadmium in children's jewelry has virtually been eliminated. You know, so all we're dealing with are trace amounts, which is why we're
Brent,
dealing with
through the chair, please.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. One question. They were talking about the glass and different kinds of metals, and my question is this: when you take cadmium and you put it in a piece of jewelry and it's melted in there, does the makeup of the other metals then, let's say zinc is included, does that change what would be bioavailable greatly, like the different kinds of metals that are in with that cadmium?
Yes, most certainly. Surface treatment makes a huge difference, okay, or whether the surface is compromised or not makes a huge difference.
Right, and we've
so that's why
about,
it's so difficult
right
to assess.
So assuming we get rid of the surface treatment, there's no surface treatment, but you have the alloy, okay, all the surface treatment is gone. But that cadmium has been put in with zinc or, I guess, nickel is one. I don't know what every metal. How much variability would there be in what would be bioavailable compared to what metal they used?
Very large.
Very large, okay.
Very large.
Thank you.
That's why the standards don't specify the exact composition. They specify what is leachable under certain standard conditions. They don't really care where it's coming from. They just look what's coming out.
I think that if everybody is really, really good, I would ask Dr. Bruckner to come back and tell you the egg story, which I got to hear. But that's only if you're good. Because everybody, I also agree, I wish I had you for chemistry, because then I might have continued taking chemistry. Then I wouldn't be an economist, and that would make everybody very happy in the General Assembly. I thank you for your presentation, Dr. Bruckner. I think we got a lot of good information today. My understanding, Angel, is that we do have a meeting next week, and it's also my understanding that we will then take a break. And we will stay in touch with you because I think there has been some discussion about possibly not meeting next week. However, we already have speakers committed, so my suspicion is that we will. However, my co-chair, as we all know, had a death in the family, and I will be talking to him about it. So thank you. You guys have been wonderful and terrific.
This is a great meeting. Good speakers. Good discussion. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Tim. And I think it went really well, too. So thank... Oh, Dr. Ginsberg.
Can we get some advance on who the speakers are next week and if they have any materials ahead of time?
Absolutely. I do believe we have a pediatrician coming in. GI physician. A GI physician from UConn.
Yeah, Dr. Berg.
And I'm not sure who else, but we will definitely try to get the materials to everyone. Thank you again, and thank you for that question, Gary, Doctor, wherever you are.